just coasted. Nickel bottle low bit, drop dead gorgeous with the smell of the ocean. Not a word we in the world didn't have it figured out. It was just me and her, that's what love is all about. Doing 60 and a 40, cause I know what drives a man.
First off, these big Cincinnati trips, big time spender here,
this guy. I'm so tired
from your big week. And Anthony Masterson back from the All-Star Game, episode number 52 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Welcome, everyone. My name is Tyler Vaughn. His name is Anthony Masterson. Today, we were brought in by Ronald Mack, a Denver-born hip-hop artist currently living in Fort Collins, Colorado, where he goes to school for audio production. He brought us in with the song Coastin' today. Big thanks to – who was it that submitted Ronald Mack this week? It was our good pal Jack Heyer. Or maybe it's Heyer.
There we go.
If it's Heyer, I'm sorry, Jack. I'm going to say Heyer. And I'll probably screw it up one way or another.
Maybe we should hire somebody to know how to pronounce somebody's last name.
Oh, that was terrible.
I got dad jokes on lock this morning.
You're killing them with the dad joke. So welcome in. It's episode number 52 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, where we talk all things Colorado Rockies baseball. And, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot to talk about over the last week because the All-Star break feels like it's been 1,000 years long.
Oh, really?
When did you get back? When did you get back from?
I got back, yesterday morning at 1 a.m.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I actually got to spend the full day after, or almost a full day afterwards, on Wednesday in Cincinnati, saw some family, and basically didn't have to wake up at 6 a.m. and fly out like everybody else.
Yeah, that's nice.
Like, I kind of set it up that way. Everyone was always like, why are you doing that? It doesn't make any sense. Why are you staying so late? So I don't have to be like you guys tomorrow, basically.
At work, they're like, we don't need Masterson. He's going to come back on Thursday. We don't need him. It's fine.
Yeah, I had yesterday off anyway because there was no baseball. So, yeah. I was just, you know, no living the life, man.
There was minor league baseball, Anthony. Some of us get paid, you know, the very small bucks to cover minor leaguers. Also, there's a hilarious video if you go to MILB.com right now. The San Diego Chicken was in Iowa yesterday and was coaching
San Diego, Iowa, and was coaching first base
and got a runner picked off.
Did he really?
It's pretty great.
I mean, is that on the chicken or is that
it's got to be on the runner. It's got to be on Matt Caesar for not listening to his chicken first base coach. Or for overly listening to him.
Listening too much.
I don't know. Hey, episode number 52. Not a whole lot of contenders for episode number 52's namesake title today.
No, but one that I think we're going to have to use. Obviously, yep. Chris Russon wearing it this year. Joel Peralta in 2009. Juan Murillo, who we've mentioned a lot random this podcast over the last few weeks.
We have.
From 2006 to 2008.
And I thought that's who you were referring to, but then I saw.
Yeah, Sean Lowe in 2002. But then our good buddy John Thompson.
John Thompson.
1997 to 2002. Thompson without the P.
Right.
I think he has to be our number 52.
Yeah, I think you're right. He was a seventh round pick.
Yeah, you look at one of the wins above replacement leaderboards among pitchers in Rockies history. He's way on there.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
He sure does, John Thompson. John Thompson was on the roster at the same time as Mark Thompson.
Yes.
And that was always very confusing. I feel like today he would be like a broadcaster's nightmare since they can't figure out Bumgarner. I feel like there would be a lot of P's thrown into Thompson, which is not T-H-O-M-S-O-N. There were some names on that 98 pitching staff. Some bad Rockies pitching names. Daryl Kyle was there. That was year number one with Daryl Kyle, Pedro Ostacio. And then Jamie Wright, who I always loved. Bobby Jones, John Thompson, Mark Thompson, Chuck McElroy, Mike DeJean, Mike Munoz, Kevin Ritz, Dave Veers, Curtis Luskanic. That's like an all-star roster. And Jerry DePoto.
Those guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's an all-star roster of bad Rockies pitching names. So welcome in the John Thompson Memorial Edition of the podcast. Here's what we got in store for you today. Short episode because Anthony's got to leave for work, whatever, with his real job.
Yeah, now I get to go back to work. So.
I was working and up until like 2 in the morning last night, and all I was doing was like trying to give good vibes out west to get Ryan McMahon a cycle, but he didn't get it. Fell a triple shot.
But he only had 2 home runs, right?
He had one. But he's still amazing, obviously.
He had a two-homer game the other day, then.
Yeah, I think he did. And Raimel Tapia reached an 11 straight plate appearances.
Yes.
And was actually robbed of a base hit in his first plate appearance back. That would have been 12. It would have been too shy of the California League record.
Jeez.
But
he's pretty good.
But
by the way, Ryan McMahon is average up to 298 now.
Yeah, I know. He's starting to hit. Tapia, by the way, is up to like 330. So
328. Yeah.
At what point does Tapia get to hit his way out of the Cal League? He's batting. I tweeted the numbers out yesterday. Over his last month, I believe he's batting 376. Pretty good.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Let's talk about the All-Star game.
Let's talk about the All-Star game.
Let's talk about the Futures game. We have Brian Kilpatrick, our good pal from Purple Row, coming up here shortly. We're going to kind of preview the second half. We have neglected our Purple Row family, and I feel so terrible. But our good pal BK coming up in about 10 minutes or so. But, yeah, All-Star game. You got to go out. So walk us through. You got there Friday. No.
Saturday. I got there Saturday.
Yes. Sunday was the Futures game. Let's talk about the Futures game first.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because that seems like the funnest event for, like, prospect nerdery like us.
I mean, it is. And what was cool about our set at Fox is that we were set up in right center field, like, right underneath the smokestacks. So we got to basically block that entire place off and watch games from our set, watch games from the places directly in front. And so we got there, and Sunday was a big setup day. But as a researcher, the only things that I have to get set up when I go to work on a remote location are what's called a PL, so I can talk to the producers and the talent, my printer, and then Wi-Fi. And that's pretty much it. Everybody else is locked in the giant trucks in the bowels of the stadium, and they're miserable because those things are so tiny and claustrophobic, and they have to do so much, like, technical crap, and it's awful. And I'm just sitting out there on the stage like, hey, can I get my printer set up? And they're like, okay, here. And then I'm like, okay, well, guess there's nothing left to do but watch the Futures game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I mean, I'm basically a one-man, like, research crew there.
Wrecking crew.
I was the only one there.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
That was pretty cool. So,
what did you do during the Futures game then? You just got to watch. Because the Futures game was carried by MLB Network.
Yes. So we didn't have to work that at all, clearly. But so during the actual game itself, I was, hammering away on an all-star packet, putting together some notes and stats and stuff on all the players involved with the game. But I was sitting up in our set and watching the game. And I got to watch everything go down. I saw Schwarber hit his triple, like, right in front of me. I got to just stare at Tapia all day.
Just all day.
All day. But the center field was cool because center field ended up being, for the American team, ended up being Bradley Zimmer, who was one of the top prospects in the Indians organization, who I also follow. And then Brandon Nimmo, one of the top prospects in the Mets organization, is actually from Cheyenne, Wyoming.
I was going to say, did you just yell out Wyoming things to him?
Like, I kind of did.
Cattle.
Hey, remember the escalators that we have? The two in our state. One of them still isn't working, right?
Jackson Hole and the thing with the antlers. Is that true? One of them isn't working.
Yeah. Apparently, Craig Goldstein was having a discussion, I think, around Thanksgiving time with some family about the state of Wyoming and how it only has two escalators. So he literally texted me and said, I need verification on this. I want to sound really smart at dinner.
You know, that's funny. PDP, one of our original loyal followers / fans / very intelligent baseball minds, at Danielle5757. One of her friends is from Cheyenne as well, or is from Casper. And when I told her that, did not believe me at all. This friend from Casper, and then was like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess we got that one in the bank. And that, like, was going through the actual escalators. And I was like, oh, you can name all of the other. We have more than that in Cherry Creek Mall, I think. But it's, it's a flat.
Whatever.
It's a flat area until you get to the mountains. You don't need escalators in the mountains. I like it.
You don't need escalators.
So did you and Brandon Nimmo bond over that?
Clearly.
Also, it's Nimmo, apparently. His brother went to Nebraska when I was there, and it was Nimmo for him. But his Twitter handle is at YouFoundNimmo, so it has to be Nimmo.
Brilliant Twitter handle.
Yeah, which is fantastic. So, But so did you get to bond with him?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. You just shared a moment.
Yeah, we did. I was like, hey, Brandon, Wyoming. And he goes, oh, okay. one of those kind of things.
What's your state nickname?
The Equality State.
The Equality State.
The first to let women the right to vote.
Oh, okay. Huh. Who knew?
Well, most people who have ever studied U.S. history.
Well, no. Most people from Wyoming, maybe. That's like seven people.
Well, we're known for as the Equality State because we had the first JCPenney in Kemmerer back in the 1800s.
All right, so Nemo and the Schwarber triple and all that.
And, like, the celebrity softball game went on right after that. Vladimir Guerrero went, like, 4-for-4 with four homers in the celebrity softball game, which is absurd.
That is great. Also, I heard Snoop almost got killed in that.
Snoop tried to rob a home run and eventually, like, hit his, like, knees on the wall as he was jumping over and flipped over the fence.
And he also apparently almost got drilled in the head by an errant throw because one of my pals who lives here now was like, "Did you watch that celebrity softball game at all?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "I can't believe they don't make them wear helmets because Snoop hit a grounder to third and somebody came up firing and missed the first baseman and it missed Snoop's head by like a quarter of an inch."
Ooh.
Which, you know.
That's a good point.
Brian Regan has a good bit about, you ever been hit in the face by a softball? You're not like, "Hey, that's downy soft." But I didn't get a chance to check out the celebrity softball.
Yeah,
what other celebrities?
Like Macklemore.
Was Chris Christie and his Fupa there?
No, Macklemore was
Macklemore
there.
Macklemore was there.
Rob Riggle, MLB Network people like Sean Casey.
Oh, okay.
Was there? Sean Casey had one of the highlights of the weekend.
He
actually
did.
I'm sure
he
they've
did.
Shown it on MLB Network a ton. I haven't
I
actually
saw
seen
it when it actually happened, and I was like, "Wait a minute, was that Sean Casey?" Sean Casey caught, I think it was a Todd Frazier home run ball.
Yeah, it was a foul ball, and he
Josh Donaldson,
and he saved the life of Chris Rose.
Did he really?
Who was sitting there, like next to him, like would have hit Rose in the face.
They very quickly on ESPN showed Sean Casey holding the ball up and celebrating, and I was like, "Wait a minute, was that Sean Casey just now? What?" That was pretty
and awesome. Then, like, John Smoltz apparently said it was one of the greatest defensive plays he has ever seen.
John Smoltz, Andrew Jones in the prime of his career, and also Sean Casey at the home run.
And also Sean Casey at age, like, 45, catching a foul ball at a home run derby.
All right, so Futures game was Sunday. That was awesome. Monday, the home run derby was, like, the winner of the week. The home run derby was amazing. Now, I'll be
I have to say that I have never been at a sporting event with that kind of excitement before in my life.
That is awesome.
It was incredible. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. It was ridiculous. MLB killed it this year with the new format, and thankfully the weather was coming in because they were going to have those 5-minute rounds. I think 5-minute would have been overkill.
Right. I think you're right. I think the weather did them a favor. Yeah.
Still.
I was interested because Anthony Rizzo led things off, and you could tell toward the end of his first round he was starting to get tired, and that was what I was waiting to see was if he walks away, is he just going to, like, collapse? And he did walk a few steps away and then put his hands on his knees and started breathing, exaggerated, but showing how exhausting that is to just stand up there and try to mash for 4 minutes straight.
Yeah, I mean, Pujols basically just stopped.
Yeah.
For one reason or another, had this in the second round. He was like, "Yeah, you know what, Jock, you're good.
Yeah, yeah,
you can take this one, buddy.
All right, whatever. You're young, you young bucks." That format,
yeah,
was.
Awesome. I would say the only other sporting event I've been to that had that kind of atmosphere was 2007 ALDS Game One with the Yankees and Indians at Jacobs Field.
That's cool.
It was the Indians' first time in the playoffs in 6 years. Yankees in town. You know, Indians should have made the World Series that year against the Rockies. Didn't happen. And then we saw how that ended.
It was ridiculous.
I've never been to Home Run Derby. Never really cared about it at all because it's mostly boring for the most part. But the cool thing was when you're watching it, you're seeing all these guys like, you know, swing, swing, swing. These guys probably made 30 to 40 outs around. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and in the old format, that was it. Like, you see, you know, the old format, oh, your guy takes two pitches, you know, hits a grounder, takes four pitches, like, hits one almost to the wall. Like,
there is no immediacy in the old format.
And I still can't believe that.
So cool.
Peterson set it up with 14 homers.
I know.
Like, lost.
That's insane. Oh. I mean, nothing will ever beat Josh Hamilton that round that he had at Yankee Stadium. But
we have had this discussion a lot, actually. Old formats of the Home Run Derby created iconic moments.
Yeah.
Like with Josh Hamilton. They didn't create momentous occasions like the whole Derby.
Yeah.
The whole Derby was awesome from front to back, really, for the most part. And you know, Josh Hamilton had that great run in 2008 at Yankee Stadium.
He didn't even win that home run derby. He didn't even win the derby. Yeah, that's right. The thing I really liked about this format was it made it feel instantly like every swing was valuable. And somebody noted yesterday, I was reading a thing on, I think it was on Deadspin, about how even the rule that you had to wait for the ball to land before they could throw the next pitch, that increased the suspense. Because that was like, as you started getting down to the last seconds of a round, you're like, oh man, is this ball going to come down? It was so cool. Now, I think it was Barry Pachesky yesterday at Deadspin kind of rained on everybody's parade and didn't mean to, but he said, like, I'll be interested to see how this feels when it's not in a ballpark that was basically designed to host a home run derby.
Well,
I think
we'll
that's true, because it'll
year.
Be exactly in San Diego and Miami over the next couple of years. It'll be, you know, a different story, but still, I mean, I think too, you probably get a lot more guys interested now because the format is so much more exciting.
I agree.
You know,
completely.
That must've been fun. And then the game itself the next day.
Well, I mean, and this is with everything that was going on this weekend with the weather in Cincinnati too. I mean, you tweeted out the picture of me just hiding under the bowels of the stadium.
Yeah.
So on Monday, we're having our production meeting at 1:30 with all the talent in there. You know, it's all the producers and whatever. And then, you know, Pete Rose, Frank Thomas, Kevin Burkhart, Harold Reynolds popped by during that time as well. And so we're having the meeting, whatever, what we're going to do for the show that night. And then somebody runs into the trailer, which was sitting underneath the stadium as well, but still probably about 100 feet from the actual bowels of Great American Ballpark. So we're covered in everything, but we're right next to the street where the opening is. And somebody runs in and says, hey, guys, there's tornadoes in the area. We're being evacuated underneath the stadium. So we go, oh, okay. And you open up the trailer door, and it's like a wall of water just hit you. It's one of those kind of things because the winds were gusting at about 50 to 60 miles an hour. You had just an absolute monsoon coming at you. Like, I ran outside to get underneath the stadium. I was outside for maybe 3.5 seconds, and my clothes were wet 4.5 hours later.
Yeah, it did not seem like it was. I figured at least one of those events was going to get postponed.
I can't believe they didn't.
Yeah, and like, not even delayed, you know?
Yeah, the only thing that got canceled was our one-hour MLB whip-around show on Tuesday on the All-Star Game Day.
I blame you.
Because another storm came in that day in the middle of the day and started blowing everything to pieces at our setup there. And if there was lightning within an 8-mile radius of our set, we could not be on the set because the entire thing was metal. And we're, you know, sitting underneath the giant smokestacks that are metal. So
that's fun.
Yeah,
no, it seemed like it was going to be a much more challenging week weather-wise than it ended up being, which is good.
But so the actual All-Star game itself, you know, we get there. It's funny, when we're pulling, you know, probably 12, 13-hour days every day that we're there on remote. So we get there to the ballpark at like 11 and, you know, meetings at 1:30 or whatever. And then we go get everything set up, ready to go. Obviously, the weather comes in, delays everything. We finally get on the air at 7, do like a 45-minute pregame show with Pete and Frank and Kevin Burkhart. And then we head down. We have to go head down and, you know, prep during the game. So I actually got to watch the first inning on set and saw Trout's homer, etc. But then it had to go down. And so what that ended up doing for me was that I went to the green room, that trailer that we were in where we got evacuated from, and watched the All-Star game with Pete Rose in Cincinnati.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
But the stuff that happened before the game, the introductions that he had, when the Living Four, you know, franchise Living Four or whatever came out, when it was Bench, Mays, Aaron, and Koufax, with Koufax throwing the first pitch to Bench. I mean, how do you not get chills with that? It was incredible.
That was really cool. That was a really cool thing. I mean, I know everybody complained, you know, that Barry Bonds wasn't there or whatever it is. But it was,
you know,
it was
point,
a very cool idea.
It.
And and not only that, but like, you know, it's a way that Major League Baseball, they're honoring their own. It's not like it was some actual award that people were given. That it's just a way for Major League Baseball. Really, I mean, I think the entire
franchise
four thing.
It's like getting snubbed for an ESPY. Who cares?
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think the entire franchise four thing was devised as a way to get Pete Rose there, to have an excuse to be like, okay, this is how we're going to honor Pete Rose.
Sure.
But, you know, it.
And it worked.
Everybody's got to complain about something, always.
Exactly. So,
and yeah, Barry Bonds
it was
been there, but come on.
It was a sensational weekend. It was tremendous.
That's
all
awesome.
The way around from front to back. Cincinnati did a phenomenal job of getting everything together. Like, I had been to their to Great American Ballpark in 2008 for a Rockies Reds game, and
okay,
that riverfront area around there in 2008 was a ghetto. It was not a fun place to be around. You went to the ballpark, you left. It was kind of like where Coors Field was in Lodo
right
before Coors Field got there. It was a not a good place to be. And right now it's all, you know, your typical restaurants, breweries, chains, but they've really like built up the actual park itself right near the Roebling Bridge, where they've, you know, put in like playgrounds and fountains and gardens. Ooh. And you have the Bengals Stadium right there. Then you have Great American Ballpark. Then you have the U.S. Bank Arena where the, I think, University of Cincinnati used to play. So that part of the area has really, really been built up, and it is very, very nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah, it was a very fun week. I mean, it was a cool – the events went off really well. Even the game was good. You know, I mean, it's
– yeah.
Again, it's frustrating if you're a National League fan, but, you know, it's not like we have to worry about a home game seven.
Nope.
So, you know. Hey, speaking of which, we're going to talk a little Colorado Rockies baseball on this Colorado Rockies baseball podcast. And our good pal Brian Kilpatrick will do the honors from Purple Row. We haven't talked with BK in a long time, but he joins the show next. Somehow all season long we have neglected to include our good pal Brian Kilpatrick of Purple Row because we are jerks like that. So we're checking in with a boss man from Purple Row here on episode number 52, the John Thompson Memorial Edition of the show. BK, welcome back. How are you, man?
Things are good. Sorry for being as elusive as winning baseball at Coors Field.
Well, you've got an excuse because you have like two very small children at home, right?
I do. Yeah, I have a two-year-old and a five-month-old. So, yeah, I don't sleep.
Well, see, that's fine because watching terrible baseball makes people lose a lot of sleep as well. So we're all very adept at doing that. But, BK, let's talk about the way that things are headed toward the trade deadline, toward where we are at this point in the 2015 season. I think we're sort of getting to the point where, for the Rockies, it's almost piss or get off the pot time. And I want to know, for the sake of argument, let's say you've got the reins. If this is the Brian Kilpatrick plan to get toward the trade deadline 2 weeks from now and to move this team forward toward the end of the 2015 season into 2016, what is your plan? What do you do? And beyond that, what logically and realistically do you think will actually happen for this team?
Okay. I'm running this organization. I'm trading the following players. I'm trading Carlos Gonzalez. I'm trading John Axford. I'm trading LaTroy Hawkins, I'm trading Rafael Betancourt, and I'm trading Jorge De La Rosa.
I noticed there's one name conspicuously absent from that list.
Correct.
One Troy Trevor Tulowitzki.
That is the triple T. And he, you know, I said this at the beginning of the season, and I could probably be talked out of it now, but I still happen to believe it, that he can be part of the Rockies' next contending team, and I still don't think whatever return they might be able to get would be worth losing him, and I still believe that, and like I said, I still think there's enough moves that can be made to where you can keep him and you can still focus on building a winner a couple years down the road.
All right, so give me this. Of those guys that you named, and it's funny because a lot of people will think, like, oh, what are you going to get for John Axford? What are you going to get for Rafael Betancourt? Whatever. Those guys, I mean, obviously, Axford has struggled a little bit as of late. Betancourt hasn't been necessarily as effective as, you know, he has been at times this season, hasn't been season long. But LaTroy Hawkins has only given him one run over his last 14 appearances, I think. So there does exist some value in those guys. If you were going to make those deals, what's the target? What is the goal to make those successful, acceptable deals for this team to push for or to make happen before the trade deadline? Or even, you know, deals for somebody like Carlos Gonzalez or Jorge De La Rosa?
Well, I think you can point to kind of what the Rockies started to do this past offseason. Of course, you know, you look at pretty much any form of media, anything else, they'll tell you, hey, Jeff Breidich and the whole Rockies organization just sat on their hands, didn't do anything this past offseason. And on the surface, that's kind of true. But one thing that you can kind of see that they started trying to do was acquire some power arms, power relief arms, mostly. You know, so it looks like maybe they're trying to go away from having so many guys in the bullpen who are reliant on getting weak contact. Because, you know, as you know, that doesn't work really all that well at Coors Field. It has in the past, but a lot of these guys are still power arms. They throw hard, but they can get good sync, and that works a little bit better. But, you know, having guys like LaTroy Hawkins and Christian Friedrich, Brooks Brown, these kind of guys who, you know, can't miss a ton of bets. I mean, that's something the Rockies probably want to go away from in the future. And I think that's what they started to do this past offseason, getting Austin House and Jairo Diaz and some guys like that. So I think that's kind of what you can look for in return for guys like Hawkins and Axford and maybe even Betancourt. You might be able to shoot a little higher as far as what you can get for Carlos Gonzalez and Jorge De La Rosa. And then also one name that I didn't mention before, but you might be able to think about dealing because you'd be selling high on him right now, is Charlie Blackman. You can shoot for the stars a little bit for those guys. You might be able to, especially with the cargo deal, you might be able to eat some money and maybe get yourself a potential future number three starter or something like that in return. And the same with trading De La Rosa, who the Rockies could have gotten Eduardo Rodriguez for last year at this time, and then Charlie Blackman as well.
It's like so brutal thinking about that Rodriguez deal, because not only was he brilliant to start the year in AAA, but he's been very good at the major league level in the Red Sox organization, where he ended up going last season. And it's kind of one of those ones you don't really want to think about.
It's rough. I would love to talk to somebody about that and somebody being Dick Monfort and kind of find out what the train of thought was there. I mean, you kind of understand it because De La Rosa, you know, he's been so good at Coors Field. He's been so good, period, really, if you look at everything as a whole. But you got to look at improving your ball club at some point too, and being realistic, which this office hasn't always been.
BK, what do you think the realistic approach to this deadline is? Because, you know, I mean, obviously this has been a hot topic for a while now around town for people that observe this organization. And I think it's the first chance that Jeff Breidich really has to start putting his stamp on the way he wants the major league roster to look. I've been on ESPN Denver a handful of times in the last few months, and every single time the conversation turns to who's going to get traded. Is Troy Tulowitzki going to go? Is Carlos Gonzalez going to go? But the trade deadline for the Rockies has never really been something that's been a massive watershed changing type of moment. What do you think that the first deadline under Jeff Breidich is going to look like?
Yeah, and it's hard for me to sit here and say that this year is going to be different. Because it's kind of the same, man. Like it's they're going through an identity crisis again. Here they sit 10 games under 500, but they're only 7.5 out of the wild card. So, you know, it's going to be hard. And I understand this. It's going to be hard for the front office to essentially sit down and tell these players and Walt Weiss and everybody else, hey, we think 7.5 games is too much, is too insurmountable of a deficit. We're going to start selling guys off. I mean, that's hard to do, you know, especially with a bunch of veterans on your roster. But they've got to get realistic at some point. I think Breidich is different. I hope Breidich is different. And I think reading between the lines a little bit of what he said to Grilk, I think maybe that says that, yeah, we're gonna sell off some parts that we can't use for the future. And God, I hope he does it, because they've got to do something. And I'm not talking change just for the sake of change, although maybe I kind of am, because it's not only are they a bad team, they might be one of the most boring teams as far as like following transactions and things like that. But you know, it's time. The identity crisis has to stop. This is who you are. Even when you're healthy, they're proving that this year, everybody's healthy, they're still bad. Even when you're healthy, you're a 75, 78 win team perpetually, and that's just not good enough.
I think the other difficult thing here, too, is the fact that you don't have a front office that's ever going to commit to what the Houston Astros did, where they say, you know what, we're going to blow this up. We're going to be terrible for 3 years, but we're going to stockpile very good talent in the draft. We're going to work hard in our amateur signings, our international signings, and we're going to figure out a way to build something sustainable from within, because there's always this mantra coming out of spring training every year of, no, we want to be competitive on the field. We want to put a product out there that people can be proud of that is going to be contending late in a season. So there's never the ability to fully embrace, like, no, this isn't working. We need to try something different. But that being said, I mean, they do have two very large trade pieces in Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez. I still don't see a scenario in which those two guys are both gone, period. And I don't think it's just at the trade deadline. I don't see that they open 2016 with a roster devoid of Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki. Am I wrong?
yeah, they won't part with both of them. And like I said, I think it will be Tulowitzki who stays. And like I also said, I think that they can still build something with him here. But yeah, they're it's just really hard to envision. Like you said, they're not going to blow it all up. The jury's still out on whether they have to. I don't think they have to blow the whole thing up, but they're not going to do it anyway. So it's almost a waste of energy to even talk about it. One thing that sticks with me, though, and I said it on an interview I had yesterday, is that never in the last 5-6 years had we heard anyone actually come out and say, hey, if we can't get it done this year, then we're going to make some changes. And Walt Weiss actually said that prior to this season. And so that I keep hanging on to that, and I keep going back to that, and we'll see if anything actually comes of it. But no one actually said that before, so that has to give a little bit of hope.
When you look at this roster right now, I mean, the Rockies are set in a lot of areas. I mean, starting pitching is always going to be an issue here. The bullpen is always going to be an issue here. But position player-wise, outside of those two spots, if you look at this roster, what is the biggest position of need for the Rockies? Because, I mean, obviously around the infield, you've got Gold Glovers at third, at short, at second. You've got a solid outfield as it stands right now. Even if you trade Carlos Gonzalez, I mean, having Corey Dickerson hurt certainly doesn't help. But even if you trade Cargo, you have some depth. You have guys coming up in David Dahl and Raimel Tapia. What is right now the biggest position of need for this offense going forward? Ben Paulson's been good over at first base. Tommy Murphy is a catching prospect they're very high on. What do you see as being that big piece as far as the position player puzzle goes?
Well, you mentioned it. You know, generally, a major league team isn't going to worry about first base a ton. Pretty much every free agent contract signed by a first baseman in the last, 350 years has been bad. So you're not going to go out and sign a first baseman to a long-term deal. You don't want to bring in a guy who's, you know, produced for a long time and then all of a sudden is going to fall off the face of the earth like every first baseman does. But it's a little bit more important for the Rockies to settle on someone for that position. A lot of it has to do with their pitching approach. You know, if you're going to keep bringing in ground ball guys, pitch to contact guys, or whatever, that makes your first baseman a little bit more important than that position would be on some other team. And they're not going to have Morneau. And Ben Paulson, great guy. He can hit a little bit, but he's not, you know, he's not a full-time major leaguer. William Rosario is just not going to work there. So they do need to figure out something. And they did a good job, I think, with getting Morneau in as a short-term solution. Obviously him getting hurt isn't something that you plan on, but you know, they might have to do a little something like that, get another stopgap in there, because unless they feel that Kyle Parker can play the position and hit at the major league level, then they're still going to be in a little bit of trouble there going into next year. And then the back end of the bullpen, they've got to get settled too, because they should be trading Axford, trading Betancourt. They need to spend the rest of this season seeing what they really have in Rex Brothers, but you know, they're going to have to figure out something there as well.
All right, Brian, somehow we have made it to 15 minutes into this interview or however long it's been, and we have not asked or discussed the question of all questions, and that's this. John Gray has yet to pitch in a major league game, and I think we thought it was coming a long time ago. I think a lot of people thought it was coming a long time ago. It hasn't come yet. It could be coming Sunday. As of right now, the Rockies are listing their starter as TBD, and he's scheduled to throw in Albuquerque. Make of that what you will. But the Rockies took John Gray with the third overall pick in 2013, a fire-breathing type of guy, a mid to upper 90s type of fastball, a wipeout, ridiculous slider, and then in somewhat very Rockies fashion, brought him into the organization, said, tone the fastball down a little bit, learn how to throw this changeup, pitch to some contact. Now, I don't know if that's entirely the case this season, but I think it does maybe concern you a little bit in that you don't really know what you're going to be getting when you see him at the major league level. We've seen so many organizations do this to guys and kind of throw them off developmentally. I mean, we've talked about it a lot with Tyler Matzek. You bring a guy in because you like what he did before the draft, and then you try to change everything he does after the draft. When John Gray gets here, inevitably, in 2022, what are we going to see? What is the John Gray that we are going to see when he finally breaks through to the major league level?
Well, I do think we're going to see him sooner than later. you know, I had a long conversation with Daryl Scott, the Albuquerque's pitching coach, and he didn't come right out and say it, but he alluded to the fact that Gray's very close. They like where his development's headed. They really like how he overcame the adversity early in the season, and he's, you know, outside of like two starts, he's been wiped out since May 1st. So, you know, that's promising. So they like what they see. They like the development of his secondary pitches. And he's still a little bit, at least, pitching with training wheels on. And I think once they get him to the big league level, he won't be anymore. So I think we might see a little bit of a different guy. He'll probably be a little bit amped up. He's going to have some command problems, but, you know, he can probably slot in and be the Rockies' second best pitcher right away. There's little doubt in my mind. But as far as when exactly we'll see him, could be this weekend, could be a month or two from now, but we're going to see him in 2015.
Does he lead this rotation coming out of spring training next year? Because I think as of right now, I mean, you hope to get a rejuvenated, reincarnated Eddie Butler if he continues the learning curve that he's had in AAA, where he's had some really good appearances over the last recent stretch with the Isotopes. I mean, Jorge De La Rosa obviously is still going to be there. But is John Gray your top talent? Is he your number one guy going into 2016? When they break camp, is he going to be the guy who slots into that spot at the top of the rotation?
I think so. I think if things continue the way they are now and Chad Bettis keeps pitching well, he might be the next guy in that revolving door of opening day starters. But, you know, aside from all the pageantry and everything of that, like, you know, John Gray's going to be the best pitcher probably on the roster out of spring training next year. You know, they may not pitch him on opening day, like I said, but he's going to be, other than that, the definition of their number one starter. I do believe that, especially if they decide to trade De La Rosa, which if they get anything close to the offer that they had last year, they've really got to pay a little bit more credence to that.
He is Brian Kilpatrick, the man, the myth, the legend. You can follow him on Twitter at Purple Row BK. You can follow Purple Row on Twitter, as you may have guessed, at Purple Row. And BK, it's so good to talk to you, man. It's been forever. I feel like we're sending out a cross-border hug here to welcome you back to the show.
Hey, I hope I see you again in person soon. Have to get a couple of cold ones and tell Anthony I'm glad he made it out of Cincinnati.
I will absolutely do that, because there was a few dicey hours there where he tweeted at us and said, send help, and then I didn't hear from him for like a handful of hours. So, you know, I thought maybe he got swallowed up by a tornado, but no such luck. I think we would have been fine. You and I would have hosted the show together. It would have been great, but, you know, we love Anthony, I guess.
Yeah, we would have been all right without him, but, you know, it's probably for the best that he's sticking around.
Brian, thanks, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Big thanks to our pal Brian Kilpatrick and his tattoos for coming on the show today.
Crying Bill Patrick.
Crying Bill Patrick. He's a good man. He's a good man, that Brian Kilpatrick. You can follow him on Twitter, by the way, at Purple Row BK, where he tweets presumably from his mother's basement. Blogger.
Yeah.
Right? Am I
little
right?
Little boy
though?
Blogger.
Little hot dog boy blogger. That's... first post All-Star break edition of the show, grinding through that second half. Hashtag rise and grind.
Hashtag blessed.
by the way, did you tell Jesse Spector of our love for him?
I didn't. I actually didn't see him after that, unfortunately.
See? That's why you can't miss these opportunities.
I know.
When I was in North Carolina a couple weeks ago, USA Baseball was taking on Cuba, and I saw this guy named what is his name now I'm already forgetting his name, Peter Bjarkman, who is a writer. He kind of writes for himself and just covers Cuban baseball, and he, like, is a guy who I've read for a very long time, used some of his stuff as scouting reports on players that, you know, came through the Carolina League or the Eastern League or Cuban players and whatever. And I was like, oh man, I'm gonna go introduce myself to that guy. Introduce myself to him. He could not have been more of a jerk. And it's
really?
Like, yeah, which is so surprising to me. Like, it's one thing if you know, work for a media outlet or something and you think very highly of yourself. But like, when you're kind of like a self-employed dude who's just made a little cottage industry out of figuring out stuff about Cuban baseball players, and somebody says, like, hey, really enjoy your work, and you just have zero interest in hearing from that person or talking to that person. I was like, man, this is surprising. Like, you're not cool enough, man, to like, nobody here knows who you are, and I'm actually coming up to say hello to you. You're not that cool.
No,
I don't know.
One of the funniest things, though, was this weekend was just seeing this the massive amounts of people who I vaguely remember from, you know, newspapers or, you know, blogs or from, you know, regional networks across the country showing up like at the hotel bar going like, oh, yeah, like I know that guy, I think. But they just get guys like, you know, like Peter Gammons. Like I was right in the taxi line behind Jason Stark.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, seeing like Rob Nyer and Brian Kenny going toe to toe like at the hotel bar. You know, on whatever that they were talking about, that was fun too. So all that kind of stuff was, it was a really good people watching this weekend, of course.
Have you gone to the winter meetings? Have you done the winter meetings thing?
Yes, I did it in Vegas my first year in 08.
Oh, okay.
I also did it in Indianapolis the next year.
Because that is that, like, if you want to go just hang around and see baseball faces, that's the place to go. The winter meetings is like, you're just walking around. It's like, oh, there's Tommy Lasorda. There's Billy Bean. There's Scott Boras. There's like, they're just like hanging around, just like standing in a hotel lobby for an entire week. Or
that's pretty much what it was. Kind of on steroids though.
That's cool.
You know,
don't say that baseball.
Oh God. What a faux pas.
You can't do that. Well, awesome. Today we were brought in by our good pal, Jack Heyer, or Heyer's friend, Ronald Mack. Ronald Mack, you can find on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/Ronald Mack. That's M-A-C. Big thanks to those guys for getting in touch for the show today. And until next week, when Anthony gets us Pete Rose.
Hey, I talked to Pete a lot this weekend. He seemed very, very excited about Forrest Wall's chance of becoming a fringe major leaguer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he seemed very, very excited about coming on the Purple Dinosaur podcast.
No,
basically,
I told him about you, and
he
said that he didn't like the sound of your name.
Basically, you're saying that you did not do the one thing that you're supposed to be doing. Pretty much.
That is correct.
For this free employment podcast that you are on.
Good. By the way, one last stat to go out on today. The Rockies in the second half have the hardest strength of schedule in the National League West. Play 23 games on the road against teams that are over 500 right now. So,
hey, that's good.
Gotta look forward to that one.
Hey, that's good.
But hey, you know, Tulo's reached base in 38 straight. That is the second.
That's fun.
It's tied for the second longest single season mark in franchise history, behind Holiday in 07 and Kadire in 2013.
They are they have a few silver linings, but ultimately the next, you know, 2 weeks are really going to define what this team is going to be about. So we'll see how that goes.
I mean, we're starting with the Padres. You got to hope that John Gray is here sometime very, very soon.
Sunday's starter is still listed as TBA.
Yeah.
That seems to be right now the spot.
Yes.
But who knows?
Who really, at this point?
In all reality, who knows?
Who damn knows?
you know, John Gray is going to be, I think, a rather lengthy break between appearances for him, because the AAA leagues are just coming off of their All-Star game, which occurred on Wednesday. So John Gray made his final appearance before the All-Star game. He last pitched on the 12th, so 5 days ago. And as of right now, I do not believe that he is listed as a starter for Albuquerque coming up over the next 2 or 3 days. So that seems to be where it is. Tonight, Jair Jurgens goes for the Albuquerque Isotopes. Tomorrow, it's Aaron Laffey. And then they do have John Gray listed as Sunday's starter, but we'll see.
But that can change.
We shall see. So, yeah, that's as much.
Eight and a half back in the wild card, man. Eight and a half back in the wild card.
But, you know, if you read the local newspaper and people who enjoy blocking people on Twitter, quote, the spring training mantra of being a legitimate contender and playing meaningful games in September rings hollow now. Dun, dun, dun.
Right. Oh, sorry. Whatever. Well, could you hear my wanking motion that I was making over the microphone?
Whatever. So until next week, we have yet to get anybody from the Boise Hawks on. So that
Ooh, that's
needs
right.
to happen as well, because I need to ask them about that giant blimp. And if
yeah,
effectively
we've really
the
dropped
episode.
The ball on that one. Not
yeah.
gonna lie.
Yeah.
We've really
That is true. So we'll venture out there. We also, I think now we just need to stalk our favorite national writers who follow us on Twitter, because Jesse Spector is like one of our favorites. I think follows you. Rob Nyer, yes, for some reason followed me the other day. So I think we just need to be like, hey, do you guys want to come out and talk about things on a free Rockies podcast?
You want to talk about a team that's in last place right now in the middle of July?
Did you notice the Twitter troll that called us fanboys last week?
I did not. I was a little busy.
That was fun. And I said, yes, our two jobs with national media outlets make us fanboys. And he said, fine, apologists then. Oh, okay. Okay. You obviously are very new to our shtick.
Yes.
I don't think you've been hanging around for too long. But anyway, fanboy.
Yeah, you get out of here, you fanboy.
Yeah, enjoy getting back to the grind. Hashtag grind show.
Hashtag rise and grind. Hashtag bless. Hashtag blessed show. Hashtag blessed and grind.
Can't stop, won't stop. Blessed and grind. I'm surprised that I'm sure minor leaguers use that.
Probably.
All right. Till next week. All right. We'll talk to you then when Pete Rose joins the show. Bye.
Bye.
Rapping is a way to escape, a way to share what I am feeling so that you can relate. And honestly, I never meant to be in the spot. I used to go to church, now it doesn't happen a lot. And I'm ashamed, I let the devil into my head. I probably should have been at work, but I was smoking instead. I'm afraid this possibly is my last shot. Sky's the limit, so I'm just hoping that I blast off. He had a passion in mind, and his mom kept saying that he's one of a kind. He had the strength to make it through with the look in his eyes. He had a natural born talent, didn't know at the time. Started making new friends, didn't care about the past. School was getting harder, didn't care enough to ask. All he cared about was things that he wanted to have, and knew that asking for a change wouldn't bring things back. The way the world is, he just had to go and learn. Making bad decisions, so his parents were concerned. Sick of all the rumors that he tried to leave behind. So instead of going forward, he was stuck on rewind.
Stop.
Wanted to show, he just had to prove the critics that he had what it took, but he couldn't get the right people to give it a look. He looked up in the sky and he started to pray. Nervous at first, he didn't know what to say. Scared to ask for help, pulled him out of the shade. But I guess that's how he works in mysterious ways. Now he knew about the reason and the gift that he had. He started getting impatient, but he decided to relax. Had to realize that the things that he wanted the most wouldn't be easy to find, but he was getting damn close. All his old dreams seemed to drift and break away, but he couldn't find guidance, no one saying break a leg. But what about the dream and the passion he once had? I guess it was something that he didn't want back.
Baggers can't be choosers. There's an old grocery store joke I used to tell.
You are such an idiot. Oh my god. That is a dad joke that I am going to use one day.
Make the hidden track.
Let's do it.